It used to be that if you ever dreamed of being a wizard or a warrior, you had to use your imagination. Maybe play a role-playing game like Dungeons & Dragons. But thanks to technology, there's another option now. Massively multiplayer online role-playing games. Edward Castronova is the author of Synthetic Worlds, The Business and Culture of Online Games. Castronova's introduction to the world of online role-playing games was a game called EverQuest.
When you first load it up, you just have this character that appears in an environment, and you can press a few buttons and you can move your character around. And then there's a little box on the screen, and in the box are people chatting. So what that is you see someone's name and then the message that they typed. So you might see someone typing, "I'm looking for a ride to go to the zone of Darnassus." And then someone else might say, "Hi, everybody. I'm trying to sell my patch of red fur. Would you please buy it?" And so you're standing there and you're kind of reading these, and immediately you can tell, okay, there are people communicating and I don't understand what they're communicating about. And then you might get the sensation that somebody might be looking at you, like they're making requests of you, because these characters will come running up and they'll kind of look at you. And so my first reaction was basically I went and I hid. I was like, oh my gosh, this is too freaky. You know, I mean, everyone's probably looking at me and can tell I'm just being an idiot. I don't know what I'm doing. So I ran into a tent and I hid back there and just sort of listened to people talking for a long time. I found out later that the characters that I was running away from were actually not being run by people at all. They were characters being run by this software with these pre-programmed conversations. And so they were saying to one another, "Hey, would you like to have a beer?" And just kind of, you know, enlivening the local atmosphere. And here I thought it was real human beings.
It was all designed to make you feel comfortable in a new environment.
Right. And instead I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to make some faux pas. I don't know what anyone's talking about.
Well, at some point, though, it must have become more real to you and you began to realize that there were other people there. Do you remember when you first sort of entered the society?
Yeah, I actually had a gradual acculturation process. So I began to kind of see what people were doing. And a typical thing in a game like EverQuest was that people were trying to make their characters more powerful. And the way you do that is you go and you try to defeat challenges. You get a quest from some character in the world who says, "Please, you know, take this ribbon over to the tailor on the other side of this area." And off you go, and then something attacks you and you have to fight it with your sword. And so I got in the habit of doing that. And I really learned something, though, when I made my first general broadcast statement to everybody who was in the area. I needed to get, for some quest I was doing, I needed to get across a zone that had a lot of monsters in it. I knew they would kill me. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I can get some help from a more powerful character. So I went bravely to the edge of the city where it was just still safe, and I opened up the chat box and put it on the sort of the loudest setting, the yell setting, and I said some sort of Elizabethan flowery, you know, "Hail, bold adventurers. I seek to cross the dangerous zone of Flanipina, and I request your assistance. Please come to meet me." And they just broke out laughing. Because it turns out you never speak that way. Even though it's a role-playing game and you're supposed to be warriors and mages, if you sound like Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings movies, everyone laughs at you. So they're like, "Oh, shut up, you noob," which is a term for a new person.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, I'm sitting there beat red at home. My character's not turning red. But and so then you learn, okay, that's not what you do. You just say, "Hey, can somebody help me get across the zone?" And when I did that, I was just fine.
Yeah. Well, gradually, you obviously became comfortable there. When was it that you began to realize that you were watching something that was professionally interesting to you? When did the economy of this place begin to become noticeable?
Well, it struck me when I entered a certain zone, and the chat box that I just referred to of people talking to one another lit up. It just absolutely lit up. Things were scrolling through so rapidly that it was just the eye couldn't follow it. And you had to sort of do stuff to make the box bigger and slow it down. There was just so much information passing through, and it was all information about markets. There's people selling things. There were all these merchants in this one area standing around. It was interesting because it wasn't a market area. It wasn't designated by the designers as, you know, the market of Freeport. No, it was actually a sort of a barren area, a tunnel. And I said, "What is going on?" And I walked into this tunnel area where everybody said, you know, "Come and meet me to buy this, that, and the other." And I go in and hear hundreds of characters standing around, not fighting monsters, not exploring, evidently not socializing. All they were doing was hawking wares. And so here's this open-air bazaar that had emerged spontaneously in this tunnel for reasons that I found out later related to transit routes and all this other stuff, completely unintended by the designers. And I thought, my goodness, there's an emergent market. And at that moment, I decided to start writing down price tallies. And what really won me over is the more things I wrote down, the bigger this economy turned out to be. Until today, it's actually quite substantial.
Now, what I gather started to interest you, there are many things that have caught your attention, is that there is a kind of a transfer between the economic life inside the game and outside the game. Can you explain that to me?
Well, the basic situation is that it is possible to work your way forward in the game by using real money. Here's how you can do that. Let's say somebody else has accumulated a gazillion gold pieces, doesn't want to play the game anymore. So they have a character that has a gazillion gold pieces, and you want those gold pieces. Now, you could take your character to his character and say, hey, why don't you just give them to me? But, you know, that's cumbersome, and you don't know who has the stuff. So what people do is they might go online and go to eBay and see, is anybody selling their gold pieces? So a fellow who's got a bunch and isn't going to play anymore could just post an auction on eBay saying, hey, if anybody's interested, I have 25 million gold pieces in this fantasy world. I don't need them anymore. Give me $50, 50 real U.S. dollars, and they're yours. And so innocently enough, a market based on that transaction emerged. And you could go to eBay a few years ago and see hundreds of auctions of people selling their gold pieces and magic wands and all this for real money. And then, of course, it didn't take too long for other people to realize this is a profit-making opportunity, and so now it's become a profession. You know, folks just go into the virtual world, mine it for the gold pieces, sell it on eBay, and make a decent living.
The other interesting question, though, is what impact this is having on the games, because presumably it was set up so that you would earn money for doing things that mattered, and now instead people are saying, well, I don't feel like being a grunt for the first 5 years. I think buy my way in.
I'm actually terribly concerned about that. I think one of the great things about the technology is, you know, it's an opportunity to have a world apart, a city on a hill almost, if you will, designed according to what the designers think the players want to do, and then you go off and you have a separate existence, which can include a separate economic existence. So if you feel frustrated in your day job, you could see your empire grow by, you know, gradually building up something in the virtual world. And I think that's a restorative, corrective, positive experience for someone to have that gets ruined when, you know, you work your way up and then all of a sudden you realize you've just been beaten by some kid whose dad is a lawyer who whipped out a checkbook and bought his way forward. Right. You know, if we're going to live out a Horatio Alger myth, which is what these places kind of allow you to do, you know, and you can't live it out in the real world, heaven knows, you know, that would be great. That would be a cool thing. Then, you know, the same forces that defeat Horatio Alger myths in the United States, the rags to riches myth, and in the real world, to come into the virtual world and ruin it there, you know, that's a problem. So I generally oppose the use of real money to advance yourself in a fantasy world. If you're going to use money to advance yourself, do it in the real world. There are ample opportunities out here.
Well, besides this economic interreaction between virtual and real world, are there things that still make it worth playing? Are there other interesting things going on in these online fantasy games?
Yeah, thankfully, this real money trade, we call it, is not the dominant characteristic of what's going on. I mean, there are very sophisticated social effects that are interesting to study. We're going to learn a lot about human learning from this environment because you've got these social effects in a constructed environment that's got goals. And, you know, is there any reason why I could not at Indiana University build a fantasy world based on the work of William Shakespeare? Exact same game mechanics, but all the texts and all the lore are just Shakespeare. Is it not the case that people who get into that world are going to learn a lot about the world's greatest writer? So there's some interesting educational things. There's also research implications. You know, because you could think of these places as petri dishes for planning out public policy, you know, things like security, response to epidemics. There's actually a lot of implications of this technology.
Are there online games that resemble the real world? Are there political fantasy games, for instance?
At the moment, no. There isn't a game based on, let's say, the United States election, although that would be an interesting thing. There is a game that pretty closely resembles the real world. It's called Second Life, and it's actually not a game. It's more of a venue. It's a place where people can have a character, like a video game character called an avatar, and you can buy land there, and you can build things there. And so you could build a house, or you could build a game for people to play, and you could charge them money to come and experience the content that you made. That world is very open and connected to the real economy. So the reason they call it Second Life is it's sort of like a second life for you. So it's not trying to be a fantasy game. It's trying to be an extension of the real world and an enhancement, if you will.
Edward Castronova is the author of Synthetic Worlds, The Business and Culture of Online Games.